2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's go to Ross, who is on the line in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Ross.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you.
Good. I've got a question. I've got about a 15 by 15 foot spot that I want to put strawberries in. And I'm going to bring in some topsoil and probably mix it with some Nutrimulch. But I want to find out how many plants I could probably put in there and what would be the best way to water it.
Well, the first question is, why are you bringing in topsoil? Is there inherent problems with yours, or what's the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, it's I'm reclaiming some land that has no topsoil whatsoever.
Okay.
It's in a barren area that I've slowly started to regenerate, and I've tilled some areas in, and I've planted tomatoes in that area, and so I'm just kind of expanding out.
Okay. So, my struggle is that a lot of times when you haul in topsoil, you oftentimes bring in somebody else's problems. And so if you have to, that's fine. You know, I get that, you know, just sometimes you need to do that. And if there's nothing growing on that soil or whatever, and especially if you're making a raised bed of some sort, then you might be fine to go ahead and put that soil in there. Now,
okay.
When you bring in your Nutrimulch, don't mix more than about 20% Nutrimulch or 25% Nutrimulch to the soil. And it's not that Nutrimulch is bad or anything. It's a great product. It's just that with any compost product, you don't want to overdo it because it may temporarily rob the soil of nitrogen as it breaks down. So, there's a lot of compost out there that would work. And so as far as the spacing on the strawberries, you can put them a little closer together if you want, but about every 18 inches is a standard spacing for them.
Okay.
And especially if you're just filling bed up. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. And then I was thinking, I didn't know, is drip system to each plant or a sprinkler. I know that I've read that they really don't take a lot of water. I don't know.
Well, they're going to need to be watered at least twice a week to a depth of 6 inches.
Right. Okay.
So you'll want to do that. And it depends if you're row running them and you're going to keep them trained into rows, then a drip system, just like drip hose, would be fine. You may need to run a couple of lengths along the row so that you can get the whole thing watered. But if you're going to be putting it into a big patch and just letting them have their way and let them grow wherever, then you're probably going to have to overhead water.
Okay. That's kind of where I was headed to do that. And I just didn't know. And it's going to be incorporated with my other gardening, because it's off of a sprinkler line, and I'll have, like, you know, my tomatoes and squash and stuff like that. And I didn't know if it would need less water to put in like a
valve to not water as often as I do or what? So that's why.
No, yeah, you're going to water them with the same amount of water you would your tomatoes. But through the summer, because they don't root as deeply, you're at least going to have to hit them a couple times a week.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Well, I'm excited to. This is the first time I've tried it, and I wanted to try to get the best start I could. So you've put me on a track anyway. So
all
I appreciate
right.
it.
Ross, thank you for your call this morning.
Maria,
yes.
Really quick, I wanted to put out there that there is another orchard family in Santaquin who I work quite a bit with doing some pruning, and you can get one-on-one work with them, pruning their trees and things like of that nature. I put a link on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page to them. I think it's $20 per person, and they're doing peaches and apples, I believe. But the information's there, and the reason they do this is they like to work with the public a bit, but it also helps people understand the challenges of growing fruit trees. So, yeah, I just wanted to put that out there real quick, that the
great
information
opportunity
is on our Facebook page.
It's a great opportunity. So, Ton, we've talked a lot about urban gardening, vertical gardening. I think this is the first time we've talked about RV gardening. We have a texter who plans to do the full-time RV life with his wife, and he's wondering if there were any plants that would be able to stand living in an RV. I believe that he's talking vegetable plants.
Well, that's going to be a little difficult. What they might be able to do is get some narrow and longer, basically pots. They would be raised beds, but they would need to be probably 6 inches to a foot deep, and something that if they're moving, they could just pick them up and put them in the back of the van.
Oh.
Not convenient, but then they could put them back outside when they stop somewhere. So as far as what to grow in there is the challenge, because most of our summer vegetables.
How would you do zucchini? I mean, they would go everywhere.
Yeah,
you couldn't really do that.
You would have
tomatoes,
to do salad.
Though, maybe.
Yeah, tomatoes. There's one called patio. It still may get a bit big, but there are also some micro tomatoes, like Micro Tom and a few others out there that only get about a foot to 18 inches high. So they could do those. They could do salad greens or things like Swiss chard, but they would just need to be quite selective on what they put in them.
Right. How do houseplants do in RVs? I would imagine they'd probably be okay.
Well, they would be, but the challenge you're going to run into is they can never let that RV get above about 90 degrees or else it will kill the houseplants.
Right.
And so if you park
any
that,
plant, right?
Yeah, any plant. So if you park it and walk away and go hiking and it gets hot in there, your houseplants are done. The other challenge is that when you have these houseplants and then you try to put them in full sun, as Sheridan brought up earlier, is that they will scald. They're getting a sunburn because they're just not adjusted to that intense sunlight. And so there's going to be a lot of challenges.
Sounds challenging and messy.
Yeah.
The next texter has some 3 to 4 year old cherry trees, and they really want to have some cherries this year. They've been picking off the blossoms so they would focus on growth. How much will it impact the development of the trees if they let those cherries grow this year?
If they're on the fourth year, then they can let the cherries grow.
Should be fine for the tree.
Yep.
Will they get cherries today this year?
Should, unless they get hit by frost or something.
Mm-hmm. And also, when should they fertilize them?
If they're growing well, there's no reason to fertilize. If they look good, they're getting a good 18 to 20 inches of growth on them. If they're new trees every year, no reason to fertilize. If they look healthy and their growth isn't quite there, then they would fertilize in mid-March with maybe just a small amount of fertilizer, like a half cup per tree of 2000 or 3616. And then they would do that again, maybe in mid to late May, and that's it.
Okay. Next person would like to know what the best pre-emergent would be for bindweed.
None.
What else should they do to prevent it this spring?
Well, pre-emergent would help the seeds from coming back, but because bindweed can come back from root, then it might help a little, but they're still going to be overwhelmed.
So if it's taken over in their flower beds, what's your best advice for them right now?
It depends. If they want to keep things pesticide-free, then hand-pulling or cultivation every couple of weeks, every 2 or 3 weeks through the summer, will slowly diminish the bindweed. And over a period of about 7 to maybe 9 years, you can sap its energy. The other option would be to hand cultivate it through the summer. And then if there is in areas like the lawn or in their garden and they can get done gardening and let the bindweed grow a little bit, you can spray it out with Roundup and a surfactant, or in your yard, like a four-way weed killer, and see if you can go after it that way.
I'd like to also remind our listeners that you have done a couple of videos on bindweed that are on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page.
They are.
And one focuses on bindweed in the grass, right? And one
yes,
on the flower beds, right?
And one in flower beds. And the one in the flower beds, and this is effective any time, they can, I would recommend watching the video, but they can get the bindweed when it's about 6 inches to a foot long and gather up a clump carefully and don't pull it, and then put it into a Ziploc bag. Put a hole in the bag and then spray into it with Roundup mixed according to label, and then cover that bag up with a box or a cloth or something to keep the sun from scalding it. And the bindweed just keeps absorbing and absorbing that Roundup in there. And that can actually be really effective in your flower beds. But really watch the video because it goes into a lot more detail.
All right. And you can find that at the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. You can also find it on our website at kslnewsradio.com/greenhouse. We're going to take a break. We're coming back with more of your calls, more of your questions. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton taking your questions at 801-575-8255. Also, your texts at 57500. We have received a text from Scott in Brigham City, Ton, and he wants to know, what types of grass seed would you use and when would you put it out?
Well, the grass seed I would use for my yard is probably Kentucky bluegrass. You can never go wrong with, because it's self-repairing. You know, if you put a divot in it, within a month or so, it oftentimes is recovered. My personal favorite grass is turf-type tall fescue. It roots a little bit more deeply, and it tolerates a lot of wear. It doesn't get as many diseases and insect pests as the Kentucky bluegrass, but if you damage it, unless you have what's called a rhizomatous variety, you will need to reseed it a little bit or wait longer for it to recover. But I have Kentucky bluegrass, I have perennial rye, and I also have turf-type tall fescue in my yard, and the fescue has performed the best.
The next person would like to know how to get rid of suckers from their elm tree, how to keep them from coming up in their lawn.
Honestly, and I'm really not trying to be facetious or sarcastic, but until you cut down the tree, you're always going to get those. Now, you can try a pre-emergent. Bayer makes one called season-long broadleafed weed control that has a dandelion killer plus pre-emergent that you could try, but as long as those trees are there, you're going to have continual problems.
When is the best time to move peonies?
Well, in the fall, just so that they have a little more time to recover. If you had to, mid-March, but you're probably not going to get flowers for, you know, at least 2 to 3 years after moving them.
let me see. Some of these get really complicated, so I have to try to interpret what they're saying. Next person wants to know, they are having an earwig infestation. They say they can already hear those little critters saying, "We're back." They've tried traps, new soil, but they seem to enjoy their vegetables more than they're enjoying their own vegetables. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I would still use the trapping and start it as early in the summer as they can. Just monitor, and when you start seeing a few of them, get the traps out. And USU has a great fact sheet on how to make a few different kinds of traps that you can use. But if they're overwhelming the traps, then they may need to look at other factors such as, you know, is there a lot of debris everywhere that they're hiding in? You know, and if that's not the situation, then they may need to turn to some sprays. And so 7, spinosad, permethrin, there's a number of sprays out there, but they may need to turn to a combination of trapping, monitoring, and spray.
The next person says that they know that you don't like straight-up sterilizers. However, they have about a half acre of driveway and farmyard that they want to sterilize, and they want to know what their best option is.
Well, they need to make sure that there's no tree roots anywhere under their driveway or where they're going to be putting the sterilizer. And if there's not, and there's no desirable plants, then, and it's a relatively flat situation, then they're probably okay. And there's a number of them out there. And what I'd recommend doing is just stopping by the local farm store and getting whatever they've got. You know, Crowbar is one, Weed Blast is another one that are more for widespread use, and go ahead and apply it. But your challenge is just to make sure that there are no desirable plant roots running under where you apply that sterilant.
We are getting a call from Camille in Chihuahua. Good morning, Camille. How can we help you this morning?
Okay, I'm calling about my little succulent. I bought him at a box store. He was tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Last summer I put him outside. He grew big. Brought him in the fall, took him to my work, stuck him in an east window. He got a flower on him. But now all his little leaves, I guess they're leaves, or petals, they seem like petals to me, but are brown and seem to be dying.
Hmm.
He puts off all this little black stuff. I don't know whether it's pollen or what it is, but it makes my window at work a mess. But he's been happy until just the last lately, and he doesn't seem to be drinking his water, if that makes sense.
So do you have the succulent sitting where it's in the pot? Is it sitting in another container to hold the water so it doesn't go everywhere?
It just has a little thing underneath it, but I clean it. I don't water it that much is what I'm saying.
Okay, I was just trying to make sure it wasn't sitting in standing water all the time.
Yeah, what is that black stuff, though, that's coming off of the plant?
Well, it could be a fungus.
A fungus?
Yeah.
Great.
How have you checked how wet the soil is staying?
Well, this last week, I usually water it once a week before I go home for the weekend, and then when I come back and go home the next weekend, so just, what, 7 days, six
sure,
days?
Sure, yeah.
Well, you need to stick your finger into the soil to check and make sure that it actually needs water. It is my real thing, because generally that once a week is okay. But that soil should be pretty darn dry.
I did check it. Well, I have two of them, and the other one not grown as fast as this one. But he dries out better than the one I'm calling about.
So I suspect that the soil is too wet. And if you want to try to salvage it, if it's not completely dead, then what I would do is pull it out of that current container, get some cactus mix, and transplant it into a slightly bigger pot into cactus mix, and make sure that this new container has good drainage holes in it and that it doesn't sit in standing water. And that would be what I would try.
Okay. So you think, what if that is a fungus?
Then they're, without more to go on, is it on the actual stems where you're seeing the black?
No, it falls off on the windowsill.
It's on the,
are they petals? Is that what they are?
They're leaves. They're leaves.
Okay.
Flowers have petals.
And then it falls onto the windowsill.
You know, I wish I could tell you more.
Why don't you, Camille, why don't you send us a picture of it on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page in the messages. Just send us a picture And we'll see if we can better determine what is wrong with the plant.
I loved it, and it got so big, I was so excited, and then boom.
Yeah, and sometimes they do that. Pregnant. Sometimes that, you know, sometimes I haven't been able to determine why they've died. They just do.
Yeah. Well, the black stuff that falls onto the windowsill is sticky. If that's any help.
We probably need some pictures because there could be some aphids. There could be a lot of different things doing that. And so some pictures uploaded to our Facebook page would be useful.
Okay. I will do that.
Camille, thank you for your call this morning.
Thank you. I wish you had my succulent.
I wish I could see it. Just send us a picture and we'll see what we can do to help you.
Will do.
All right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye. The next person is asking, they got a gift of a prairie rose and they want to know what they need to do to grow it here. Will it do well here?
Well, when they say prairie rose, I'm assuming it's a real...
It's Queen of the Prairie is what
Queen
it's called.
Queen of the Prairie. Mm-hmm. If it's a real rose, it should do just fine. If it's actively growing right now, then they need to keep it indoors because it'll die outside because it's too cold. If it's dormant, they might be able to store it in a garage or an unheated shed. It just really depends on if it's bare root, in a pot, and dormant. So, but yes, when it is time to plant, sometime in April, it'll do fine.
Okay. Next person wants to know, they have grass in their blackberries. Will Roundup kill the berries as well as the grass?
I don't like spraying the stems or the canes of blackberries or anything with Roundup. And so what I would maybe do is get some cardboard and wrap the base of those plants with some cardboard and spray around. But I know people do it, and as long as they're dormant, you probably would get away with it. But I've seen Roundup, especially on trees, repeatedly sprayed on trunks over years, and where it's been sprayed, the bark has a tendency to crack and slough off, and it's just not a good policy to spray a lot of Roundup on even dormant plants.
All right, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, we are going to be talking more about blackberries and specifically blackberry management in Utah and selecting the best blackberry cultivars for Utah. I didn't realize blackberries were so hard to pronounce this morning, Don. Stay with us for more of the KSL Greenhouse coming up following the news.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.